Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day, the 17th of March. All things political, the first hour of our program, which always happens Monday at 9, and we are happy to have John Zogby with us the first half hour of this program. A little bit later, our guest from the Huffington Post, which does a great deal of political analysis at their website, huffingtonpost.com. Well, welcome phone calls for our guests, and our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. We have much to discuss. The war in Iraq going into its fifth year this week. We will talk about how that's going to play out in the presidential election. Of course, race is still a big issue in a fairly negative way. We will discuss that issue. Iowa delegates, Edwards voters going to Obama over the weekend. And this big controversy over the superdelegates playing an important role, the number of states that Senator Clinton would have to win in order to capture a nomination here, what could happen, if anything, that would keep Senator Obama from getting the nomination. We will look at the world economy because that news just keeps getting grimmer and grimmer as the days go on, and how that will play into what we care about when we vote and who has the edge there. Senator John McCain in Iraq, we will look at his position on the war and if he staked out a position that is different than the administration, and that will be helpful for him. All kinds of things to talk about. John Zogby is our guest, American political pollster, senior fellow at the Catholic University of America's Life Cycle Institute. He is the founder and the current president and CEO of Zogby International, which is a polling firm. As you well know, he founded the firm in 1984 and has conducted polls around the world, although he has gained most attention for his polls in the United States presidential election. We'll be welcoming phone calls for John Zogby. 800-486-8655 is the number, 800-486-8655. Hello, John Zogby. How are you?
Good, Kathleen. Good. Always good to talk to you.
Yeah, great to have you on the air. Let's start with Iraq because we go into the fifth anniversary this week. John McCain, Dick Cheney, both in Iraq. This has been such a huge issue, as you know, John, for so many years. Is it still a very large issue in this campaign, and what do Americans want?
It's not as big right now, I think, for a couple of reasons. On one hand, for those who want to believe that the surge is working, the surge appears to be working, and that's pretty much the news agenda. That's what Americans get to see. On the other hand, for those 70% or so who oppose the war in Iraq and think that it wasn't worth it, I think there's a strong element of Iraq fatigue, a sense that, okay, we know where we are, we know this hasn't worked, how do we get out? We're not exactly hearing anything that gives us any comfort. Meanwhile, of course, the 800-pound gorilla is the economy, which keeps getting worse and keeps getting bigger.
Right. John McCain has been in Iraq the past few days. How does he play this issue? It seems to me as though it's a difficult one for him, unless the surge seems to be getting better and better over the next few months.
It does. And so the entire Iraq issue is a house of cards, meaning for the United States and for the U.S. Election, it's all dependent on things on the ground. These temporarily bought Sunni alliances to the north and west of Baghdad that have tempered things in some previously tough provinces, as well as the Mahdi army under Muqtada al-Sadr, which has a truce, a ceasefire in operation. Either one or both of those things fall apart. Things, incidentally, which are entirely out of the control of the U.S., and the whole thing flares up again and becomes page one news. But for now, the surge seems to be working. That's what the news that we get. And John McCain is the owner and author of that surge. And secondly, Democrats seem to have fallen into or played into John McCain's strength. When Senator Clinton played the famous ad in Texas, "Who do you want answering the telephone in the White House at 3 o'clock in the morning?" Our poll out last night says overwhelmingly Americans want John McCain answering the telephone before they want Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. So right now, he's in the driver's seat on that issue.
Isn't that interesting? Tell me what's happening to his numbers as Obama and Clinton go at each other in a most disheartening way, I think, on the issue of race.
John McCain's numbers soar. Well, if not soar, at least he does better. We have him in a two-way race in polling that we'll have out for Reuters on Wednesday. He is about tied, maybe a point lead, over each, over Clinton and over Obama. Just a month ago, Obama was leading by 7 points.
Oh, my.
And Clinton was down by about 5 or 6 points against McCain. But now it's at about a tie. However, with Ralph Nader's name tossed in, Ralph Nader in each of those races polls 5-6%, which is the difference. McCain leading 44-39 over Obama, 45-39 over Clinton. And all of Nader's votes coming from young people, progressives, and independents who ordinarily might vote Democrat. And look, it's not just some reservoir of goodwill for Ralph Nader at this early stage. It's much more so the bickering and the, I think, the early disillusionment as to what's happening within the Democratic Party. It's much bigger than Obama versus Clinton. These are warring demographics, each with a sense of historical destiny during this election, that are at war with each other right now.
And would you say that it would behoove them, as they keep seeming to do, to declare a ceasefire here, which would be helpful to both campaigns, or not?
What's stronger than behoove? it's absolutely necessary. Time can fritter away. First impressions, you know, are very important. And we're getting very close to the point where it can be argued that the Democrats are blowing the election.
No kidding. That's strong.
You know, look, anything can happen. We've got a long way to go. And, you know, the media attention, of course, will focus on John McCain again. Everybody gets it at one point in time. However, let's parse this a little bit. Barack Obama... Senator Obama, of course, has gotten a very good free ride and until the last couple of weeks. But in the last couple of weeks, he lost Ohio. That was enough to have us look at that blue-collar, Catholic, white ethnic vote and to see where whatever formula was working for Obama in the Nebraskas and Kansases and Idahos of the world just didn't seem to play out for racial reasons to a great degree in Ohio. Now we see the Clinton strategy again, just the same as it was in South Carolina, which is turned Senator Obama into the black candidate and isolate him as the black candidate. And then along comes Reverend Jeremiah Wright's tape, which does precisely that for Obama. This time, this kind of news is not good for Barack Obama, and these are general election kinds of issues, which means not only does will Obama, or it's not simply that Obama goes into the convention with more delegates, but the same question gets raised about him that's already been raised about Clinton, which is, can he appeal to the middle? Can he appeal to that one missing element that has lost it for Democrats the last few election cycles? And this has been a bad week in that regard. He is wounded right now.
Yeah, I think that's entirely accurate. Well, I'm wondering, does it stay with him? Is this certainly the media, and I don't want to spend all hour on this, which I'm sure listeners would probably want us to, but does this Jeremiah Wright story stay with him and stay with him? Is there any way I think it points to a real cultural divide in the country as well. Although, as somebody was saying in one of the shows yesterday, there are a lot of places, a lot of pulpits in America where you get a fiery kind of oratory, and some other people may find what was said offensive. It's interesting that it's on him. But can he let this go, or does it point to such a cultural divide that it's going to be really, really problematic for him?
He can't let it go. And again, it's not a question of where does America stand, because America, to a great degree, has moved beyond race.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a competitive election, no matter which way you look at it, not only among the Democrats, but in the general election, which means that any small group which holds something in the balance needs to be addressed. And in this instance, mm-hmm. there are those who don't understand the cultural divide,
right,
or the racial divide, no matter how small they may be. And they could very well be the swing vote. I think they want to change. I don't think that they're enamored with the Republicans, but that race in some ways becomes the gay marriages
mm-hmm.
issue
mm-hmm.
of 2008. And look, I told a conservative talk show host the other day who played the Reverend Wright tape, I said, look, that's a subtext. This does go on in African-American churches for a lot of reasons that I believe a lot of Americans understand. By the same token, there is also a Rotary Club meeting somewhere in the South or Midwest where someone is telling a racist or an ethnic joke.
Yes, right.
And there is a birthday party going on where someone who shouldn't be saying it is saying Strom Thurmond was right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These are the subtexts in American politics. They are still there, and they need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about what we're hearing? I'm hearing anywhere from 60% to 65%, John, of all remaining states need to go for Hillary Clinton, or there is no way that she can win this unless she figures how to get all the superdelegates to go with her.
I'm going to make some news right now. I think either Barack Obama gets the nomination, Kathleen, or neither of them get the nomination.
Whoa!
Frankly, she's got to win 65% of the vote. You know, she could come close to that in Pennsylvania. But I don't see it happening in Indiana. I don't see it happening in North Carolina. And I don't see it happening in any other state. And so, very simply, in terms of pledged delegates, she doesn't catch up to Barack Obama. In fact, when all is said and done, the margin that exists between the two of 150, 155 delegates,
mm-hmm.
Where Obama leads, pretty much stays by late June. Now, does Senator Clinton emerge with the popular vote? Probably not. All depends, obviously, what happens in Michigan and Florida. In terms of what will finally happen by way of a revote or a compromise. But here is the dilemma. Obama goes into the convention with more delegates and probably the popular vote. Clinton goes into the convention with almost as many delegates and not far behind in the popular vote. You certainly can't tell Clinton to bow out. By the same token, when it comes to the superdelegates, do they vote conscience or do they vote the popular will? A lot of pressure for them to vote the popular will. They're looking for some clarity. But there's a key question that needs to be answered in all this about superdelegates. Why haven't they been with Senator Clinton already? She was the establishment candidate.
Mm-hmm.
The better-known candidate, and it's clear that there are serious questions about Senator Clinton's ability to appeal to the middle, where this general election will be won, and her ability to drive the Republican base to the election. And so when push comes to shove, she has damaged herself during this electoral process. So it's a question now, does Obama win it, or is there a compromise candidate?
Hmm. Well, if he's got the delegates and he's got the popular vote, how could he not win it?
Well, now there are questions about whether Obama can win in the general election. Mm. Up until a couple of weeks ago, what we were seeing is that in the head-to-heads against John McCain, Obama did better. Why? Because he appealed to the middle. That message of hope and opportunity, and it's that message of bridging the gap between Democrats and Republicans. But has he now been successfully portrayed as the black candidate who is narrow cast? This is where it's time for Obama to give a John F. Kennedy speech.
Mm-hmm. Right, which he is fully capable of doing. Right?
He can do that. And I must say, it's time for Barack Obama to get beyond the one speech.
Mm-hmm.
For those Americans who've heard it, they have heard it and heard it and heard it and heard it. He's got to move beyond this.
Mm-hmm. So if we do arrive at that point, we get to a convention and then we come up with somebody else who's more palatable or more electable, and who makes that decision?
Well, hopefully there aren't any cigars. Probably not any Cuban cigars as well. But this is the elder statesman of the party.
Oh, my.
And an elder stateswoman or two. Otherwise, it's not going to be credible. Hmm. So let's go down the list. Jimmy Carter is probably a good one to have there. I think John Edwards is at the table because he's got some delegates.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi is another. I would suggest Al Gore, except that Al Gore may be the beneficiary of all this.
He could be the nominee.
He could be the nominee.
Oh, my, John. You are making news, John.
I try to avoid controversy.
I can tell. Well, if phone lines are flooded, let's go to some calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. Send an email if you'd like. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Zogby is our guest, pollster, president, CEO of Zogby International. Let's go to calls. Carol from Mequon, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Boy, with the Reverend Jeremiah Walker, I'm African-American. Again, John Zogby's right. People talk like that in the pulpit, but I am very frustrated with Barack Obama for not hitting this off. In fact, I can't believe it, that this wasn't dealt with a long time ago. But I do agree that it is like a relative, and I think if everybody thought back to a relative that says what they want to say, you know, you just kind of shake your head. And I believe he has been sitting in the congregation hearing this stuff, but because people talk like this a lot, I don't think he thought a whole lot about it. But to think that way and to hear other people say it is very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, my husband and I are sitting going, what was he thinking that he has been associated with him? But obviously he has great affection for this man. And
right.
So I give him some points on loyalty because he didn't disavow him altogether. The other question I have is I've heard that Ohio or Texas and Mississippi, that Rush Limbaugh had been asking people to vote for Hillary and cross parties in order to minimize Barack Obama's winning, and I don't know how that's proven or if that's true or had Mr. Zogby heard that. Thanks. I'll take all
thanks,
my
Carol. Thanks for the call. Okay.
Sure. Let me deal with the last one first. Yeah, I certainly did hear it. What kind of an impact did that have? Probably negligible. There was plenty of other things going on the ground without the mischief vote. Frankly, there are plenty of things that explain why Hillary Clinton won both states, besides that there were a handful of people that came out because Rush Limbaugh thought it was a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And let's spend a few more moments on the right situation. He must have known he's too smart politically to not have seen this coming.
One would have to think so. He's done everything almost perfectly since the very beginning. It's hard to imagine that he was blindsided by this. I think his supporters are concerned that there isn't a cell phone camera somewhere showing him sitting actually, because he's gone out on a limb by saying he wasn't there.
Right.
When there was this kind of talk. But he has the opportunity now, I think, to turn this into a broader statement about race in America, to state the obvious, that there are divides, but I, Barack Obama, have transcended this divide. I am running as a new kind of candidate. I'm running, actually, as an African-American who is the beneficiary of a lot of things that are good, who wants to make things better, and I'm waiting.
Let's go to Dave from Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
You know, Hillary is just blowing this thing, and it's just very frustrating for me to watch. You know, this whole contest is about delegates, not about momentum, not about total states won, not about the popular vote. And mathematically, she cannot be ahead at the end of the process. And yet she stays in and is driving this wedge deeper and deeper and leaking all this stuff about Obama and doing anything possible to win.
John.
It's a gladiator fight. And she is on the pedestal and trying so hard to not fall off, but meanwhile got her hands around Barack Obama's ankles to try to get him off the pedestal before she falls, in which case they both fall. And so, yeah, mathematically it is very hard to see how she wins. I don't see the superdelegates coming out for her because they have had questions right along about her viability as a national candidate, particularly against John McCain. Let's move away from John McCain, the conservative, and understand that of all the Republican candidates, he takes the immigration issue off the floor. He does as well as a Republican can possibly do among Latino voters, which was something that it was not anticipated. He has great appeal to the suburbs, to the middle, and number next, whatever it is, whatever you like or dislike about John McCain, he is authentic. And there have never, or seldom, I should say, been questions raised about who he is, what's his core, what does he stand for, and that is a real problem that Senator Clinton faces. There are always questions about authenticity.
Let's talk about the economy just for a moment, John, because it's all over and there's so many people in this part of the country who are hurting. We've got, you know, today Greenspan seeing the worst financial crisis since World War II. The world markets are plunging. This news isn't going to get much better over the course of the campaign. I'm not sure if any of the candidates, McCain doesn't seem to have a plan. I'm not sure if Obama or Clinton are speaking to the real needs of people who are in financial crises. And I think there are tons of them.
There are tons of them. They're now growing. And you're absolutely right. Democrats hold an edge over the Republicans in terms of the economy. But Kathleen, that edge is getting narrower. I'm telling you that this... two things. This is a close competitive race, number one. And number two, neither party has grand appeal to voters. There is a massive center out there that thought it was going to get the best of both worlds. A Cecil B. DeMille movie in the making, John McCain versus Barack Obama. What a healthy debate for this country. And the last 2 weeks have been business as usual. I still think we're going to have a high voter turnout, but I also still think we may have a credible third party candidate in this race, if for no other reason than to offer something fresh and to offer something. But as long as the Democrats are off track, they're not going to be offering much of anything to say on the economy. That's why I don't think the party leaders can wait till Pennsylvania, or for that matter, till June, and definitely not until the convention, because they may as well just, instead of holding a Republican convention, they may as well just inaugurate John McCain at that point.
My goodness. And what do you think should happen and will be worked out in Florida and Michigan, John?
well, I think that, you know, some sort of, quote, punishment for disobeying the system, and then some sort of a revote that takes place. That's one possibility. The other is that both sides just agree to split the delegates, which more than likely is what's going to happen anyway, whether it's Hillary 55-45 or 58-42, whatever it is, both sides are going to get roughly the same, the same number of delegates, and Obama is still going to emerge with the lead.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that we really have flawed, deeply flawed candidates in the Democratic? It's just bizarre how this has changed so much, because people were saying we got these fabulous candidates. The Democrats are tickled pink, and now look where it is. Do you blame somebody for this? Do you think Democrats are righteously angry about this?
Well, righteously angry in the sense that it's come out awful. Mm. Flawed candidates? No. Mm. I think that actually all of them, including the two lesser candidates performing their curmudgeon-like roles, were excellent candidates. And frankly, I think the process was enriched with a Joe Biden, a Bill Richardson. Christopher Dodd was a star in all this, and the fact that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton emerged from John Edwards, too, let me say, from a very talented cast of characters suggests just how strong they are. I think that now what we see is that it's gone on too long. And if I were to assess blame for it having gone too long, I would have to assess blame on the Clintons.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in many ways this became too much of Bill Clinton's third term. And at one point, South Carolina, I honestly watched Bill Clinton morph into George Wallace and turn his wife into Lurleen, the cheerleader in the background running as a shill for her husband's third term. And frankly, in all honesty, I thought that Bill Clinton, as a former president and a good one, and Hillary Clinton, a very talented and experienced woman, they deserved better than they were giving at that point in time.
Well, you certainly have made news, John. I guess we could say you were the perfect talk show guest for this Monday morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Otherwise, I have nothing else to say.
No, all right. Well, we'll just listen to you further down the road, sir.
Take care.
Thank you. John Zogby, our guest the first half hour. John is the American political pollster, first senior fellow at the Catholic University of America's Life Cycle Institute. He is the founder and current president CEO of Zogby International, which has been around since 1984, and he's conducted polls around the world, gained the most notoriety for polls of U.S. presidential elections. And he did make news this morning, by saying that Nader had 5 to 6 percentage points probably coming from Democrats, which is a fairly high number, if you want to believe polls. I know there have been problems with polls, but what he said, which was phenomenally interesting, is he doesn't think either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton will be the nominee, that we're going to get to the convention here, and neither one, perhaps, will get the nomination because it will have become so down and dirty, it will be so close, and nobody will be able to match up against John McCain at that point because of the nastiness of this campaign. So the party elders will get together and give us somebody new. Al Gore, perhaps? It's an interesting thought. We have a different guest. We're going to continue all things political, and our phone number remains the same. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. 414-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Our lines are all open now, so it's the same theme here, political conversation, send an email if you'd like, talk@WPR.org. Joining us now is Rachel Sklar, Media and Special Projects Editor for the Huffington Post. If you don't know the website, it is a liberal website, but it's fantastic. It has all kinds of blogs and is updated all the time, and they do terrific political coverage. We welcome her now to our discussion. Hi, Rachel. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We just had, you didn't hear him, but John Zabi was just on saying something. He said, I'm going to make news here, which he certainly, caught our attention, saying he thinks this is going to get to the nomination, the Democratic side, and they're not going to choose either Senator Obama or Senator Clinton, that it's going to be so nasty, it will be so close, they will be so damaged, and their numbers will look so bad against Senator John McCain that they're going to go to somebody else, and it might be Al Gore. What do you think?
Wow. I mean, that is a bold prediction.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. He said, I'm going to make news here. I thought, oh, I guess you have, John. What do you think of that? I haven't heard anybody say that.
Well, that would certainly be a lovely moment for Al Gore if everybody came to him and said, we made a huge mistake. We love you. But that's not realistic. So much money, so much time, so much effort has been poured into this campaign. So one of the things that vexes me most about it is the fact that the sides are so divided and it has just become so venomous and so poisonous, when really how close it is, all that says is, hey, we have two amazing candidates. And I don't understand why everybody blows off this idea of the green ticket. At the very least, I think everybody should just step away from their egos and say, can we look at what will be the absolute most winningest ticket for the Democratic Party and see how we can combine two obviously fantastic candidates into one ticket. I mean, call me crazy or call me Canadian, because I am. And so that's how I combine my perspective. But I think that, what John Zogby is proposing is the absolute worst case scenario. But it's like Saturn eating his young. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how on earth a Democratic Party with sort of every advantage going into this process could have gotten to this point. It's tremendously disheartening.
Yeah, and what's even more disheartening is it seems to have done so on the issue of race. Shame on the Democrats. On the issue of race, for heaven's sake.
Well, I think that, I think this is a case of the path to hell being paved with good intentions, because everybody has been really optimistic and excited and careful about race. And I think that being careful has led to people shying away from addressing it when it comes up and being just really too quick to distance themselves from anything that might be possibly perceived as maybe being, interpreted by somebody as racist. Like, I think that rather than look at the nuances of certain positions and rather than sort of taking statements, examining them in context, examining, whether or not they may have a grain of truth or what the speaker might have been trying to, to get out there, or just any of that. I mean, there has not been an honest discussion of race, because I think everybody has been so excited and there's been a stampede to getting to the place that, gee, we must be past all this. And you really saw the apex of that after Iowa in Barack Obama's amazing victory there, his victory there in a 92% white state with that fantastic speech. Listen, you can't blame people for being excited about the best of the ideals being attained. But when you don't look at sort of the realities is where you get tripped up by them.
Mm-hmm. So how are you to decide? Certainly Senator Clinton has intimated that, well, maybe a combined ticket, people can get that, they want that. But of course there's a huge question about who's going to be on top of the ticket, and I can't imagine she would take the number two spot. Do you think?
Well, this is how I feel. I feel like, why is it up to Obama and Clinton whether or not they would deign to take the number one or the number two spot? I mean, I really think that maybe this is naive, but I think that every day, every decision, every question should return to what is best for the party, what is best for the country, what is best for electability, rather than, I wouldn't work for them, and I certainly wouldn't be second fiddle or anything like that. So that's what I think. I do think that this whole dream ticket thing has gotten blown out of proportion, and as is often the case, has resulted in a backlash against Senator Clinton. It's sort of it's being raised or presented as something that she raised out of nowhere. It came up sort of explicitly for the first time during the CNN Democratic debate between Obama and Clinton at the Codex Theater in Los Angeles, and Wolf Blitzer asked a question. A great whoop went up from the audience. And that's when the question of dream ticket was introduced. And I think, from what I can recall, I think the issue sort of was raised again after the March 4th primaries, and it was Clinton was responding to a question from the audience and said, well, don't rule anything out. And you know, and then the response was how arrogant she's, you know, she's behind. Who is it for her to say who can be her VP?
Right.
But listen, this is an open contest. So that I don't know. I don't understand what this is a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You got to work every advantage, you know, within the bounds of reason and morality,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is.
But it does, as we were talking in the first half hour here, the Democrats are now just a percentage point, either one of the two front runners, ahead of John McCain. It's an even race. Not very long ago, they were both ahead by a substantial number. And now you've got Ralph Nader taking some percentage of the vote, which will probably come from the Democrats. If you let this sort of play out, this politics play out, the Democrats could easily lose to John McCain in November. Right.
Well, you know, it's a long.
It
stretch.
Sure is long, Rachel. You're
but
right.
If you go,
it's
if
long.
You flip backwards, you know, whatever the distance is from now until November, if you flip that distance back, you know, McCain was a has been, and everybody's looking at Rudy Giuliani, and you know, Clinton was inevitable. So, and John Edwards was a major factor. So, I
right.
think that, that the lifespan of political campaigns are sort of ridiculously extended every day. They're just, you know, I guess what they say, the day is like a week in politics or vice versa. Now I'm getting confused. But so I think that you can never know. I think that again and again, you know, McCain has to be hammered on the war. And that is a huge issue for this country. And just because the surge has had some positive effects and you know, violence has gone down, the you know, I think that it's up to the Democrats to really highlight the fact that that was not the point of the surge. The point of the surge was to, you know, secure, you know, areas of Iraq so that a political solution could be reached. And that didn't happen. And you know, and sure, there's a fragile sort of equilibrium happening there, but take away the American troops and it devolves into chaos again. I'm not saying that there hasn't been progress, and I'm not saying that every death prevented in Iraq isn't a good thing. It is. And General Petraeus has really done a great job with you know, the tricky dish that he was presented with. But, like, come on, that's, you know, this is still a Band-Aid. And coming up on the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War, you know, almost 4,000 Americans have died. That's more than in 9/11. And I saw a figure, I think it was on CNN this weekend, 90,000 Iraqis have died in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
These are big deals, you know, and I think that this is where John McCain is rightly vulnerable.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Rachel. Rachel is media and special projects editor for HuffingtonPost.com. Our phone number, lines are busy, but keep the number in your head and you'll be able to get through, I hope, before we say goodbye. 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we will celebrate St. Patrick's Day, which is today, and speak with the author of Ireland, and it's part of a green travel series. It's a lovely book, so we'll talk about music and food and dance and storytelling and literature and all of that, the second hour of our program. Let's go to phone calls now for Rachel, 800-486-8655. Dan from Wausau, hello.
Hello. My comment is probably meshing with the previous guest probably a little better because I called earlier. But in any case, I feel that on the Democratic primary, what happened very early on was the press gave Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton more than their share of coverage because the historic nature of their candidacy. We have a real credible black man who is qualified to lead the country. This is a first. We have a woman who is probably qualified to lead the country making a credible run for the president. This is a first. We also had a lot of traditional white men who were maybe just as or more qualified who were neglected by the press because their candidacies are not historic in that sense. I would argue that Joe Biden, Christopher Dodd, or Bill Richardson would all be better candidates for the office of president, but
well,
nature
think, yeah,
of their longer
I agree
term
with you.
And experience.
Okay, Rachel.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure that there's a question there, but there's definitely a statement that I agree with. I'm just going to qualify your original statement, saying like it's the first time that there's a credible African American and or female who's qualified. I think it's probably not the first time that there have been people who have been qualified. However, it's the first time that there have been an African American and female candidate that have a shot. But that's I'm just quibbling with semantics there. But I agree. The media absolutely spent definitely an inordinate amount of time on both Obama and Clinton at the beginning. After one of the debates, I think it was in June, Christopher Dodd posted on his website a clock that clocked in how much time the various candidates had gotten, and it was like Obama first, and then Clinton, and then it was on a bar graph, and it was really just a stark portrayal of the differential between the attention paid to these two frontrunners. So I definitely agree.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call, Chuck from Appleton. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for taking this call. I just have a quick comment on the previous guest, John Zogby, in terms of the Rotary. He used Rotary Club as an example of an organization that might have a racist joke among its discussion. And I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but I think, frankly, the humanitarian service organizations would be perhaps the least place that could occur. Not saying it couldn't. Rotary, for example, Rotary International has virtually eliminated polio from the face of the earth with its Polio Plus campaign. And so I'm just trying to, get a fair balance of Zogby's comment on racism.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. Paul is next from Madison. Hi, Paul.
Hi, I appreciate these comments, and I just wanted to maybe echo on the present guest's contentions, which is, why shouldn't there be a disagreement between the Democratic candidates about the point of view? The point of the campaign is to educate the public about their ability to address the issues. Problem with the current state of the campaigns is that there is little discussion of issues going on and too much discussion of personality and qualifications.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Let's get to the meat of what needs to be done in this country to fix some things. The energy issue has been touched on barely by Hillary or Obama, and how the energy issues can be licensed to create jobs and develop new technologies to perhaps resolve the overriding issues behind why we are in Iraq. There are hundreds and hundreds of issues mm-hmm. that need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And if individuals who have particular issues could get answers to questions about where the candidates really have done their research and done their homework, mm-hmm. then we'd find out who's most qualified.
Rachel, what do you think? Too much personality?
I absolutely agree that it's really taken a long time to get to issues. I think it's telling that in the last debate on MSNBC, they spent a great hay was made about the fact that they spent 16 minutes on healthcare, and it really felt like this was going to be the time that they're finally talking mm-hmm. about healthcare. Healthcare is so important, and that is one of the few areas in which these candidates really, really differ, and it's a big deal, and it's a big difference in how they differ, between mandating coverage for the young and healthy versus not. So I would tend to agree. I think it's an imperfect process, and I think that it's terrific to be able to air all these issues and air the differences and have the candidates kick the tires on each other. I would agree that the devolving into the personality and identity politics has hurt the process and hurt the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. And yet this has gone on so long, and there have been 20 debates. It's not as though the issues have not been discussed, Rachel.
No, it's not at all that the issues have not been discussed. But keep in mind that the first lump of debates were very, there were questions there, which is like, give me a show of hands. And I believe there were questions about what Barack Obama was going to be for Halloween. So I think that, it's legitimate to say that sort of mm-hmm. there hasn't been a really getting into the issues as much as the... I mean, it's so much easier, and frankly, it drives so much more cable coverage and so many more internet
right.
hits to talk about the controversies that bring up. And it's not as, it's not as fun to say, well, hold on there now. On page 16, part 3, point 2C, I said something very differently. That's mm-hmm. not stuff of heart pounding political discourse. And I do think that there has been, you know, there could have been more attention. I mean, I really do think that the healthcare issue has come late to being really examined.
Thanks very much, Paul, for the call. Jeff from Mount Horeb. Hi.
Hi. This is a great discussion today, and so many great calls already. I have to take issue with the comments that Rachel made right at the beginning of this half hour regarding the dream ticket. I think I probably am more in line with Mr. Zogby in watching the air go out on this Democratic primary process. He's looking at national numbers and he's seeing the Democrats deflate. And the previous caller was right on. It did start out with issues. You're right, Kathleen. There were a lot of discussions about issues, but now it's just degraded into a slapping contest between these two candidates to, you know, see who can make the other one look worse. And McCain's going to roll to victory here if this continues to go on much longer. And I think that Clinton needs to start to concede that we have a viable candidate in Barack Obama. And maybe there could be a dream ticket, but I just don't see what Hillary Clinton brings to that ticket.
All right. Rachel?
Well, I think that, you know, I wasn't saying that Zogby didn't have a point. I was saying that there was a long way to go, and that was a really, really extreme dystopian vision. And I just would like to think that the Democrats can get it together to avert something like that, particularly with two such great candidates. And that's where I would take issue with your last point, which is that you don't see what Hillary Clinton brings to the process. I mean, I think that she obviously brings a great deal to the process. She obviously would bring a great deal to the White House. She and Barack Obama are very different candidates. But at this point, I really do think that sort of it's been well established that she's qualified. If she wasn't qualified to run for president, if she wasn't, you know, hadn't had her chops shown over the years, you know, she would have been taken out of the race by more natural means earlier on.
So there's the question: how do the Democrats get it together at this point, Rachel? What are they to do?
This is the thing. I would love to see Howard Dean provide some leadership on this. He's been notably absent from these discussions in a way that has been so surprising. You know, you don't see him on the cable shows. All of these discussions that Michigan and Florida are going on in his absence, he has basically ceded it to the states. And Gore has not weighed in. And I really think that like the time is coming for Gore to weigh in and somehow mediate. Because you do see sort of, you know, Nancy Pelosi weighed in and sort of tried to get them to get their tone together. But the problem is that there's just such a deep divide in the party now. And so every move or suggestion someone makes is aligned with the agenda of either candidacy. And it's hard to take it and say, oh, you know, this is a truly objective opinion.
Thanks, Jeff, so much for your call. Peg is next from Antigo. Hi, Peg.
Hi. I have two comments. One is that I think one thing that's missing is that we are not safer from terrorists. And the the devastating impact this whole unnecessary war has caused on our economy, I think they should hit that even more, even though Hillary voted the way she did. But the other thing is I think a lot of people are forgetting that the next president could appoint as many as 3 Supreme Court justices. And I think people should consider that long and hard. And I think that the Democratic candidate should hit this point.
I could not agree more. That has been so absent from the discussion. And it's really surprising because that is a huge, huge issue, the makeup of the court. That's probably not going to be one of George Bush's most enduring legacies. Jeffrey Toobin, who's on CNN and he's a New Yorker writer, he wrote a book that was a bestseller at the beginning, or I guess it was in the fall of 2007, called The Nine, all about the composition of the court and the intricacies of how they come to their decisions, and sort of made the point that this next election is going to be really important for the makeup of the court. And you are absolutely right. That is a fantastic point. It is something that has just not been focused.
Thanks for the call. We have about a minute left. Steele from Nina. Hi.
Yes, hello. We're always talking about firsts, and I'm so happy Nader has 5%. you have the Democrats beating up on each other worse right now than all the problems we've had for the last couple years while they could have been opposing what's been happening. And I hope a third party gets legitimized this time and let the cards fall where they may.
Okay. Rachel?
That's a little scary. I'm just going to say, you know, I think that there's got to be, you know, eyes on the prize at this point. That's what I truly think. If you want an outcome, the best outcome for the country, you got to look at how to get there and whether, you know, the process along the way is helping or hurting. That's where NADER comes in.
Thank you, Rachel, so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been terrific.
Rachel Sklar, she is media and special projects editor for Huffington Post, and they have a really up-to-date website. It's HuffingtonPost.com. If you've never been there, I'm sure most of you have heard of it and have been there. A liberal website, but really good political news. So you may want to check it out. Could be something new that you will discover this St. Patrick's Day. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. You can be sure that we'll be doing – we do just a lot of political shows. You, I think, are – much political junkies as I am, and so your calls are always, you know, terrific. And we'll be on the story as it continues to evolve. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we will celebrate St. Patrick's Day. We're going to have some fun for a change. We have some fun. We always have fun, but we're going to have fun. First, the latest news.